Yeah, so I'm from Calvary Monterey. I've been there for about a year and a half, and I worked as a did youth ministry stuff and worship stuff at Calvary Chapel Gulf Breeze in Gulf Breeze, Florida, for about 6.5 years before that, and so I've been playing guitar and leading worship since I was probably in junior high. I'm like you, just self-taught, just kind of learned along the way, but found that things, you know, interacting with other musicians and worship leaders was probably when I learned the most. So the more you can do that, regardless of what instrument you play, you know, the better. So I'm glad we're doing that today. But yeah, so I'm at Calvary Monterey in Monterey, California, and serve there. You know, I'm blessed to be able to serve there full time on staff as a worship pastor. And so I kind of lead and train the worship teams, and also oversee the tech and media team members, and am kind of involved in all of our creative arts stuff, so our website and graphic design types of things. And so so it's a lot of fun, and I really enjoy it, but when it gets down to it, I just love to lead worship and play music. And and so, yeah. So I wanted to share with you guys just a verse to get started. You know, there are so many verses in the Bible that I think are really helpful, you know, as a worship leader or a worship team member or a musician or just as obviously a leader of any kind. But one of my favorite verses, and a verse that I came across years ago and have kind of held to as almost like a theme verse for me, or one of them as a worship leader, is from Romans. If you've got a Bible or a phone or something and would like to pull it up, you can. Romans chapter 12. And this is a verse that pertains specifically to leaders. I'm sorry, my Kindle lost it here. So there it is. So Paul is talking here, Romans 12, you know, just a great chapter, and he's talking about the gifts of the Spirit. You know, as we've been looking at our sessions today, even, you know, one of the main themes is just being filled with the Spirit and going about and doing things as you're being led by the Spirit or hearing from the Spirit of God, which is just huge and definitely applies to worship leaders and worship leading. And so he's talking about how there are different gifts of the Spirit, and some people have some and other people have others, and it's up to the Spirit of God to give those gifts. And so he kind of talks about how to use them in Romans 12, briefly, beginning in verse 6. But listen to what he says specifically about leaders. See if you can spot it here. So Romans 12, verse gifts, he says, "Having gifts that differ according to the grace given to us, let us use them. If prophecy, in proportion to our faith. If service, in serving. The one who teaches, in his teaching. The one who exhorts, in his exhortation. The one who contributes or gives, in generosity. The one who leads, with zeal. And the one who does acts of mercy, with cheerfulness." And I love this first part of verse 9. "Let love be genuine." And so you probably saw it there, you know, what does he say to those who lead? He says, lead with zeal, with zeal. So, you know, what does it mean to be zealous? You know, it means to be passionate, to be energized, to be focused on it. You know, I would say, you know, one thing you could be if you're zealous or with zeal is to have joy or be joyful in it. You know, to be noticeably excited about what it is you're doing, and to be committed to it. And those are all words that describe what it means to have zeal or to be zealous for something. And so Paul's word to those of us who are leaders is, he said, if you're going to lead, lead with zeal. Just like he says, if you're going to give, give generously, you know, and this is something that is just huge for me, because I'm not naturally a terribly, you know, excited or excitable person or energetic person per se. I'm passionate about things, but I'm not a real like boisterous, outspoken, you know, fiery, passionate kind of person. But you know, I believe that as a worship leader, it's kind of important for some of those attributes to maybe come out. And you know, as I tell our, you know, the worship team that I work with, you know, I say, you know, do you have the joy of the Lord in your heart? You know, are you in love with God? Are you thankful for what He's done? And hopefully the answer is yes. And so I just say, you know, while we're leading today, you know, let that show, you know, let that be noticeable. Lead with zeal. And it doesn't have to be, you know, that's why I read verse 9, you know, let your love be genuine. It doesn't have to be phony or over the top, but just if those things are in your heart, let them come out. And, you know, one of the purposes for that is because, you know, as people are led well, they'll follow. And I think that if you're zealous for the Lord and for worshiping, over time, the people you're leading will become zealous and committed and passionate about it. As you set an example, they will learn from that and say, wow, you know, look at Aaron as he's leading worship. I can tell that he means these words that he's saying. He's zealous about it and he's passionate about it. And, you know, that looks great. You know, I want to do that. I want to be that. And so Romans 12, you know, those who lead with zeal. So a couple of just really practical things. How do you do that? Two things. Real practically, one is to really know and understand and embrace the lyrics specifically of each and every song that you lead. So that kind of sounds like, oh yeah, you know the words and you know what the song is about. But I'm saying more than that. You know, in some of the kind of historical classic hymns, maybe you can come across a word that you don't even like know or understand. That's happened to me a few times. So don't just sing it and, you know, guess what it means, but learn it, understand it. And, you know, there shouldn't ever be a lyric in a song that you don't really like know what it means, or like maybe it sounds good, but it's like, what does that mean? You know, learn what it means, and who knows, you know, as a side note, maybe it could mean something that you don't really agree with even, so maybe you won't do it. But, you know, to really have those lyrics in your heart, because I found if you do that, then you'll sing them and lead them meaningfully. And I think it's so awesome that you're, Evelina, writing songs and leading the songs that you're writing, because obviously those lyrics you are passionate about and really believe in, and you connect with them. And so, you know, so what I try to do is really know and understand the lyrics of the songs I'm leading, and I try to connect them personally to my life. I don't know if you were, you know, as I was leading this morning, we were leading Our God. I don't know if you guys were in there. And, you know, so the songs, you know, the words are so true and so powerful. Our God is greater. Our God is stronger. And, you know, God is so great and so strong that it's just kind of like He's greater and stronger than everything. So that's true and that's great, but it's also kind of vague a little bit. And so what I try to do, you can't do this for every song, but at least one song in your set, you know, if it's an attribute of God or if it's talking about forgiveness or the removal of sin or something, try to connect that to a specific thing in your life as a leader. You know, what is God greater than for me? Or what am I thankful that I'm forgiven from specifically? And so when you sing that song, at least for me, I'm just that much more connected to it, and I can sing it with real conviction and genuineness if I'm totally connected to it. So, any comments on anything so far from you, Aaron? Thoughts?
I was just going to say, can you give examples of songs that either good examples or bad examples of,
yeah,
lyrics that are either good for a specific reason or those lyrics that are vague or something?
Yeah, yeah, sure. Well, one song, a song I love to lead, Come Now Fount, an old hymn, you know, has the lyric, "And here I raise my Ebenezer."
Exactly.
You know, do you guys know that song?
Yeah.
Come Now Fount, you know some, you don't. So it's an old hymn. And, so here I raise my Ebenezer. And, what is that word? What's an Ebenezer? So in case you're wondering, it comes from the Old Testament when, at one point in Israel's history, when God had done a work, they laid out what they called an Ebenezer stone to the furthest boundary of their land, saying, God has taken us this far. And so when you say, here I lay my Ebenezer, it's saying, you know, I'm recognizing how far God has taken me. And I'm proclaiming it, you know, declaring it. So if you know that, it's like, well, that's really cool.
Yeah.
But if you just sing it, like, here I raise my Ebenezer. Next line, you know, it's like there's nothing really there for you in your heart. You know, there's a Hillsong song that was really popular a while ago, which I think is a neat song, but the bridge is just, you know, I think it's, is it fire come down, fire fall down? Yeah. Fall down on us or something. I haven't let it, so you can tell. But I think I understand what that means. But at first glance, it's like, so, you know, fire in the Bible was used like as judgment sometimes. Like things were burned.
let your fire fall.
Isn't, yeah.
It's called fire fall down.
Fire fall down. Yeah. And I think what it means is, you know, yeah, the Spirit of God, you know, perhaps in the New Testament when the, you know, the Spirit of God came and there were like tongues of fire above their head. Maybe that's what it means. But I mean, if I don't really know for sure, then it's like, well, I'll just find a different song to lead, you know. So those are a few examples.
No, it's not that one. It's not that one.
Because
I don't really like that song. But I'm thinking more of the Holy Spirit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's not, I'm not saying fire is wrong or bad or unbiblical at all. I'm
more just that it's the kind of thing that might need some clarification.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I think things like that are important to do. Like, you know, Brenton did a good job this morning of, you know, making a specific application before you started that song, Our God. You know, I think you can find lots of ways and different ways and times to do that. I would say one thing to remember would be is try to get in and get out. Like, get in, get the work done, and get out. Like, if you, a lot of times, I rarely see a really long prayer or explanation in the middle of a set that doesn't just kind of get people bored and lost. You know, so in that sense, you try to keep it quick and to the point.
Yeah.
Not like rambling on and stuff like that. But, exactly what you said. Just, you know, whether it's just in a prayer to God or even speaking directly to the church, you know, sometimes applying a song or saying, hey, let's be thinking about this as we sing this song. You know, when you find like a lyric, even if it's like one line of a song that really, like, that lyric is the reason you're doing that song today, or maybe that's the starting point of your whole set and you want to stress that. I mean, you know, feel free musically wise to not just like kind of play through the song the way it's on the CD, but like, you know, do something different, repeat that section, you know, have everything drop out, make everything really hard to stress those lyrics, you know, like, it's not coming out found, but, it's another hymn where it's like the last line almost of the last verse, and it's like, I always love that that one. Love so amazing.
the wonderful cross.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Demands my soul, my life, my all.
That line.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Thanks, man. The second thing, how do I lead with zeal? You know the lyrics and apply them. And secondly, if you get a chance, you know, we've talked a little bit about prayer at this conference, but, you know, I think we probably all pray before a service. Hopefully, if you're leading with a team, you get together with your team and pray before your rehearsal or before your service, before the service, which is wonderful and important. But if you can, I'd encourage you to take that even a step further and spend some real purposeful, intentional time praying for the people at your church, for specific needs of your church, that the worship time would, you know, if you're singing a song that has a certain theme or something, that worship time would do something specifically, whether it be to help people grasp God more clearly, or on the other hand, for people to receive mercy and help from the Lord, you know. And something that I've done from time to time is go into our meeting place where our church service is held, and just being in that space, you know, by myself, and just praying for the service and the church and the people in our church, and you know, just for specific things. And I found that as I do that, my heart grows and is burdened for those people. And then when I'm leading, I find that I lead just, you know, God gives me even more, you know, passion for what I'm doing. And it, you know, it's kind of comes full circle. And so as I do that, people, I think, engage even more. So, just prayer, but kind of specific intentional prayer towards your, you know, for your team, for your pastor, for each of the people that are going to be there that day, all of those kinds of things. So, two ways to do that. All right. So, I'm going to move into kind of just some specific musical things.
Could I say one thing?
Yeah, but I was about to ask you before we move on from Romans 12, lead with zeal, those kinds of things. Any comments or thoughts that Aaron showed you?
Go ahead.
I just, is the zeal, is that the same word as like passionate?
Yes.
Yes.
My Bible says diligence. Diligence.
Diligence.
Diligence.
Oh, I don't know.
Diligence. No, just the one like really practical thing I thought of when you're expressing the you know, leading with zeal and letting your love be what was your translation of that? Let love be, mine says without hypocrisy, yours was genuine.
Genuine, yeah.
Pick up ESV or which ones?
ESV, yeah.
Like a really practical way, like you're pointing out, you know, that people would actually get from watching you, like, yeah, this guy's excited about this. This guy means these things. And just like if you know, looking at Guzik, you know, when he preaches, or even the other day at lunch, you know, he just started talking about it. It's like, this guy actually cares about this. It's not just like, yeah, I get to preach. You know, it's like,
yeah.
You ask him a Bible question, and he's like, oh, yes. But the extremely practical thing is smile.
Yeah.
You know, which is a lot of times hard for musicians, because we get all focused. I always just go back to, go watch Brenton Brown lead worship. He's the all-time greatest example I can think of is watch that guy lead worship, because he just makes you want to fall in love with God.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's got the biggest smile on his face the entire time.
Yeah.
And he hasn't had, you know, he's had his trials and continues to have them. So, seeing a guy up there lead with that much passion and joy in the Lord who continually suffers from a disease that makes him completely exhausted 24/7 is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
And this thing has an addition to that also. Now we don't have a big team in our church, but I find that hard now that I'm trying to play with you guys. I find the same thing, but it's also a really important thing, I think, that everyone sees themselves as leaders, not only the worship leader, because people in the audience would look at the whole team, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like this, even like this,
Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm actually going to talk about that a little bit, but I'll kind of expand on it since you mentioned it. All right, any other thoughts so far?
Can I ask?
Yeah.
You just said something. I'm struggling, to be honest, sometimes. What do you say? I get your point with the smiling and so far, so on. Well, if you know... Scandinavian culture, you know, the darkness and whatsoever, in the, especially sometimes in our hearts, in our souls, it's difficult sometimes. I feel very pressurized sometimes by the American or Anglo-Saxon culture.
Yeah.
Like always kind of like being this, I don't know, as if I'm like radiating or something, you know, like, and I'm thinking it's more, it all comes down, like, since it says the verse, like, your love shall be, let's love be what hypocrisy, and if hypocrisy means actually acting in the original, in the Greek, you know, so I think we shall be standing actually to the person who we are actually, because people will know, you know, how I am in life actually, like, and if I'm not really the most smiling person or something, I think it will be good just like just to be yourselves. I think I'm getting, like, it's probably like about this joy after the word. And I think this changes a lot, because sometimes I can be really, I don't know, like grim and grumpy and whatsoever, but if I think, you know, like if I just meditate, like what Jesus did for me, like, and like all the problems that I have sometimes surrounding me, but if I really look what he has saved me from and the future, I straight away see the change in my attitude and also my appearance. But if I will be like having this American smile, it will be just so, I don't know, kind of like not real kind of, you know?
Yeah.
And I believe sometimes people will just notice that, so I don't know.
I've got a few thoughts.
You guys have any, like, how else can you express it?
Living here, I definitely understand what you mean about the culture, but, and I would agree with much of that, except, you know, like being yourself. Mm. But as long as, you know, when, you know, if God has touched us, if God has changed our lives, who we are should be, you know, what does the Bible say? The joy of the Lord. I mean, if we're not that, then we have to check our hearts and our lives, because there's something else wrong. And so I would say, based on, you know, this verse and so much of the Bible, that it's not cultural, it's just what does the Word say about our lives, you know? It's not like, you know. So I would say the Bible would stress that, you know, we should be living with the joy of the Lord, and you know, any position, whether it's worship leading or preaching or anything, there's always, we have to learn and develop things. And so on one hand, I wouldn't want to use an excuse to be like, well, this is our culture, this is who how we are, to say I can't grow.
Yeah,
I think my point was that we sometimes mix up joy of the Lord with happiness.
True.
And I believe, for example, if I really like ponder, for example, what Jesus did for me and about the future, I was speaking about this joy that arises and that I can express. But I think every person, every culture and subculture expresses it differently.
Yeah.
And I feel mostly, for example, not like smiling. I feel more like crying, like, because it overwhelms me so much.
Yeah.
You know? And I felt like, well, I mean, it will be not me actually, like, if I will express the way that I do, for example. So,
yeah,
how does it mean, like, to be this genuine? So, that's what's the question.
Yeah. And I don't know if you've, you know, struggled or battled or doubted. Like, I have too, the same thing. You know, I don't know if you have, but that's kind of why I started off by saying, you know, that's not like who I am, you know, zealous or passionate or what's the word in?
No,
Swedish.
Yeah. Alright, I want to learn that word too. So I'm not, that's not really me either. You know, I don't, you know, jump around and get all pumped and stuff for things. I don't smile a ton. I try to smile more. I think of it just because it's nice to be friendly, but when I lead worship, I do, and it's not, and it's almost like, because that's the, like, one thing that's really worth being that way about. So even though that's not how I am all the time, when I lead worship, that's kind of how I am, but it's still genuine, because it's like, this is solely focused on the Lord, and all these emotions and expressions, they're in my heart, so why not, as a leader and as someone who's a visual leader, because people are seeing me, why not just kind of get these things that are on the inside on the outside? Mm-hmm. And if that is mm-hmm. even crying or being sorrowful mm-hmm. at a certain mm-hmm. point, maybe that's appropriate too. But I think that the reason it's tough is because, you know, in America, you know, there's all kinds of like DVDs or YouTube videos you could watch and some things. And sometimes you see some things and you can just tell, like, that's not genuine, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. That's, yeah, they're like smiling and look like so pumped on this, but I don't feel like they are really. mm-hmm. And I've been to worship services or concerts or conferences or things where I felt like, I don't, like, they look like they're really happy, but I don't, it seems like it's fake, you know, like you're saying. So I think, you know, that's kind of the last thing you want, you know, and, cause people can tell, and that just like turns them, they're like, I don't want to sing along with this man or woman cause they don't really seem genuine, you know, but yeah, I mean, I think, you know, and I'll talk about this in a moment, but you know, since you're a worship leader, and like you said, I agree, everyone on the team is leading the church or service or home group or whatever it is in worship. So everyone has a part to play in being engaging and so we'll talk about that a little bit.
That's what I would say. Constantly, I would say, remind your team that the whole team needs to be thinking of themselves as a worship leader, in the sense that if you're in front, you know, you need to be an example, and you need to be helping people and inspiring people in worship. I mean, you know, I got to go to a worship conference in Germany a month ago, right before we came to you guys in June. And, you know, it was so great watching the team up there, and the bass player and the drummer. And it was the opposite of the bad example you just gave. Like, you just sensed that they were genuine about it. You know, not to say that he had this, like, fake American smile on, but he, you know, part of it was, I'm sure, the heart, but even the physical appearance, you know, he didn't just look all, like, too focused and weird out, you know, he was doing the music and paying attention and stuff, but, yeah, it's just something that takes working on for the whole team, because, you know, people who I encourage, you know, maybe you're playing an instrument where you don't get the luxury of having a free hand at any time to actually, like, raise your hands and worship the Lord yourself or be an example to your congregation. Anybody on your team who has the luxury of a free hand, like, encourage them. Like, hey, you know, take a, you know, let's be examples. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Probably my last thought on that. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Paul Balazs, the worship leader, songwriter. He had a great article online I came across years ago, and I tried to find it again a little while back and couldn't, but he was describing these worship leaders, these hypothetical worship leaders. And there was the, like, aerobics instructor worship leader who is like, all right, now sing and clap your hands and three and four and raise your hands or whatever. Just always like shouting out like instructions or orders almost, you know. So you don't want that, but you want a little bit of that. I do that. I'll say, all right, let's sing this, or go ahead and clap or something. Like, I do that. I think that's good to do as a leader. You need to lead a little bit. So you don't want to be that all the time, but a little bit of that is good. In the same way, you don't want to be the, like, super introspective, like, emo worship leader that's just like, playing and just like, what, is he in there? Is she in there? What are they doing? Are we supposed to be singing right now? You know, yeah. You don't want to do that, but, you know, a little bit of that is okay. You know, reflecting, you know, personally worshiping is good. You know, you don't want to be the, like, overly cheerful, joyful, like, in your face, super bubbly kind of worship leader, perhaps. But you want a little bit of that, I think. So I think if you take a little bit of all of those things, put to different ratios and put them together, you know, you can find a combination that's totally you, totally your style, totally genuine, but maybe has a little bit more of some areas than others, but it's these are still good, strong, worship-leading attributes. So, something to think about.
Also, being genuine, I mean, you're a part of the church.
Yeah.
That you lead in, so yeah. It's not like people don't know you.
Right.
From,
like, exactly. Yeah.
So if you go and you're another person, when you're not doing worship, and then you go up there and you go like, yay! You
know, right.
And people go, like, what?
Yeah.
And that becomes phony.
Yeah.
Especially in small groups.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
What did you say?
Especially in our small churches.
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah, right.
But I just wondered what you said before about the joy of the Lord and everything, because sometimes something has happened just before, or you're had a fight with your husband.
No.
No.
Hypothetically. Hypothetically.
Yeah. Well, you know, or something else. So you don't really feel like you're in shape. Or do you have? Do you think you should not lead worship then, or do you think you should be open with the team and say that I have a bad day today? Can you pray before? You know, it's pretty. That could be something. I don't know. Do you have any comments? Because
I think, yeah, that's a great question. And I mean, there are definitely, I've led worship every week, a couple times a week for about 10 years now. And so, you know, there are definitely days or weeks where that happens. But, you know, for me, I think that if it's appropriate, I think you could share it with the team and have them support you. You know, if it's a fight with your husband, maybe not.
We don't have the details.
Yeah, I don't want all the details, but
he's in the team as well.
Yeah, this guy.
Make sure you
know, if that's it might be good just so they kind of understand that particular Sunday. If it's a Sunday morning, you may not, be as joyful or cheerful as maybe you would normally. You just can't help it. But, I've found that, the Bible says that God is strong in our weaknesses. And I've found that, reading the Psalms, David, there's so many Psalms that just start off with these laments and just like, where are you, God? Why have you forsaken me? What's going on? But David somehow comes around a lot of times by the end of this Psalm and just says, but, no matter what, despite all those things, I'll praise you, God. You're worthy of my worship, even though I don't even feel that close to you right now, And so I think that if that's the case, then I believe you should and can still lead worship. And you just have to say, God, I mean, the way I'm feeling right now, I imagine this isn't going to be very good. But you're in control and you can do you can use this. Like, I think Daniel said, his first point this morning, God can use you in spite of yourself, And so, I found sometimes those are some of the best times, cause it's like, sometimes I'll walk away feeling like I did a really good job. And it's like, oh, that was a great morning. I did well and the team did well. But there are other times when it's like, man, I did so bad. I just was not into it, was not feeling it. But it was still a great day, and God was honored. And at that point, you just have to say it. So it was all God, And sometimes those weeks are good for you a little bit, So I think, that does happen. And it may affect your appearance or attitude. But that, which isn't preferable, but that's okay.
Isn't that a part of dying to yourself, too? I mean,
yeah.
Just saying, it's about your word and not about me and my temper.
Definitely.
Even though you should try to solve things before you go out there, but sometimes it's just things are happening on the same day. You're going to do something. If you're going to teach or something,
right?
Weird things happen that day. So
yeah.
You become cranky. And
More so than normal sometimes.
Did you have something? We were together with Aaron. Conference, and maybe you remember before what they were talking about, whether it's being a preacher or worship leader, for example, if it's especially like on staff and full time, and you gotta like get going, like leading things and so far, so on, like how often that happens actually, that you get on a stage and you have to preach the word of the Lord or to lead in worship and so far so on, but you just didn't have the time yourself, maybe like to really have the quiet time, or it's been so stressful that you actually really running like on low battery or something, mm-hmm. like for maybe a while. And,
yeah.
I figured out, because I was involved in so many ministries sometimes, like I was really actually like playing the songs, so to say, or singing, but more for practicing sake instead of really having this intimate time. Mm. And it struck me one day, like I'm kind of like, I'm actually more practicing actually than really like worshiping. And I think it is really, I don't know who it was, whether it was Scott or somebody said that our ministry shall flow out of intimacy.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember exactly who it was, and I felt like when I got my roots a little bit deeper, so to say, like really like this fellowship with God and just the time with Him, whether it's in scriptures and prayer or just singing to Him without any practicing or not caring about all the mistakes and what's whatever, whether the voice is right and the chord is right and what's
right.
You know? I felt real like it. I was a changed man after that, so to say.
Yeah.
Like, and I believe real like in everyday life as well, it changes. And I feel real with you in a sense, because I'm quite an emotional guy, I would say, probably. And I said sometimes, like, especially like before leading, you know, like I had real big stress sometimes with some close people here and there. And I was there and I wasn't feeling at all. And I sometimes just thought, I'm going to throw it or something like that. You know?
Mm-hmm.
But the more I start really like with my devotional life, really like digging deeper and taking deeper roots, for example, the more solid I became. And then I've heard this proverb by Martin Lloyd-Jones. He said, faith is the refusal to panic. You know? And I thought, yeah, this, you know, and the more I got deeper, the more I was absolutely solid. Although there was a storm raging maybe or something, like really like thing that actually will just a couple of years ago really like overwhelm me or something. You know?
Yeah.
I was like, I will not be faking it when I was leading or something like that. I don't know, I was still kind of like feeling like I can do it, and like I don't have to fake, it's okay, we're humans, you know.
Yeah.
We have situations like this and things like that.
Yeah.
I think God will be glorified anyway, you know.
Yeah.
Whether I'm feeling more happy or joyous or less, and I think it's kind of like natural, I think.
Yeah, I heard a pastor say it's a choice to rejoice.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually shared that as I was leading with our church last Sunday. And it's like, you know, we're here to rejoice in the Lord. And sometimes you don't want to, or you don't feel like it, but it's a choice. Maybe you just have to choose to, like, I will rejoice because of, you know, God is still worthy and still sovereign. So, and I think, like you were saying, the more mature of a believer you become, or the more consistently you're connecting with the Lord, the easier it gets to make that choice, whereas, you know, otherwise that can be a really difficult choice. So, yeah, great feedback and question. Anything else? I don't know, I've got some notes, but anything else as far as that goes?
I would just say you answered it perfectly. I guess that's why it's called a sacrifice of praise sometimes. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
I guess it really comes down to what are you called to do?
Yeah.
If the Lord's put you in that position and He's called you to do it, yeah, there might be times where, you know, under certain circumstances where if you have the luxury, like, can you do it this week? I need the time off. But I say generally, hey, you just do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, what did Paul and Silas do?
Yeah.
In the jail, you know?
Yeah.
Sing.
Pray and sing. Awesome. All right. Well, I've got a few just kind of musical tips, or I don't know, whatever. So I've got a few piano players. So these aren't all guitar specific. But, you know, for a while I thought of, like, you know, there's a spiritual aspect of leading worship, which we've been talking a little bit about, and then a musical aspect, you know, chords and things. And yeah, they're very distinct, but I've kind of found that some of these, like, strictly nuts and bolts, practical musical things can help apply and enable you to, in a spiritual sense, lead worship more effectively. So they're a little bit more connected than I once thought they were. So these are all just kind of practical things, but as we finish up, I'll kind of describe how they apply, perhaps in a spiritual way, so towards what we're talking about. All right, the first one that is just really simple, but, you know, most of us, I think, use like a chord chart when you're leading, so, you know, the lyrics with the chords above the words, and I don't know where you generally get those from, online somewhere, or perhaps you listen to the song and make your own, or I don't know. But if you find them online, you know, the first thing I'd say, it sounds simple, is to know, you know, all the chords in the song. So most songs, worship songs, contemporary style worship songs, just use a couple of basic chords. And so we probably know those and are very familiar with them. But every once in a while, you'll come across a song that has a little bit of a unique chord. Maybe it's like an inverted chord, so like a chord with a different note in the bass instead of the root note of the chord. Or maybe it's like a sixth chord or a seventh chord or a minor 11th chord or something. So you don't find these a lot in worship songs, but sometimes you do. And, you know, there was a time when I learned enough on guitar that I could, like, play most songs, but got kind of lazy after that and then was like, oh, that's a A7 over C sharp, but I'll just play an A because it sounds about the same. And you can do that and probably no one will notice. But just as a musician and just as giving our very best to the Lord, and I've really enjoyed and had a lot of fun with, you know, coming across a chord, and whether it's keyboard or guitar, that you wouldn't normally play, and researching it, learning it, practicing it, if it applies to the song, playing it correctly and incorporating that into the song. And that's really fun. You know, one example, do you guys listen to Phil Wickham at all? Do you know who that is? So he's got a song called True Love. And so the chorus, you know, when blood and water hit the ground, walls we couldn't, what was it? Move, came crashing down, yeah. So I play it, so Phil Wickham sings so high, I never sing the songs in the keys he plays them in. Yeah, so, you know, plus in the recording, I think he was in, like, maybe tuned down a half step or full step or something. So I was trying to learn the song and play it the way it was, but it was, like, you know, at least on guitar, maybe it's different on piano, but, like, there's a certain voicing of a chord that, like, if you're not playing it in the key, it just doesn't, like, sound the same or work. But I was determined, you know, so I finally figured it out. So it starts, the chorus starts with an A chord or an A2 chord. So it's got this B up here. When blood and water hit the ground. And so the next chord, I figured out I played an A, is an A2 major 7 over C sharp. So it's kind of a long, complicated chord, but it's not too bad to play. But it's the second chord, but it just like makes that lyric or that line, it just sounds right, you know. So it goes, when blood and water hit the ground, walls we couldn't move came crashing down, we were freed and made alive, day that true love died. So you hear it just has that kind of dissonant feel that if I was like, oh, I don't know that chord or don't want to learn it, I'll just keep playing A. Blood and water hit the ground. Walls we couldn't move. Sounds okay, but it just loses a little something there. So just kind of a challenge for you, you know, if you come across a chord or you're hearing a chord, don't give up on it. You know, press in and figure it out and kind of add it to your chord arsenal. Secondly, you know, I don't know how it is for you, but I, you know, I lead, you know, worship each week and, you know, we'll probably do like 6 or 7 songs on a Sunday and I've got a pretty long, large song database. So we're rotating through Sundays and Wednesdays. So I like to try to memorize as many songs as I can, but it's hard to memorize all of them. But I've tried to make a commitment to have them memorized at least, like 90% memorized. And so I've still got, you know, the charts a lot of times. I use my iPad. And so I have them there, and I've got some notes and some things to reference for the team. But for me personally, you know, if I've got to look at the chart as I'm playing for more than just a split second to just to reference it, then I don't know the song well enough for me. And how that kind of applies spiritually as a worship leader is that it's I would say, about impossible to lead a song zealously and passionately and connect with your church if you don't know how it goes, and you have to look at what each of the next chords are or what each of the next word is. You know, imagine that song, True Love, you know. When blood and water hit the ground, walls we couldn't move came crashing down. You know, not that you'd actually stop, but in your mind, you're reading ahead. What happens when walls we couldn't move? Oh, they come crashing down. Okay. How are you really, like, do you really mean that when you sing it? Or are you just, you know, reading the words off the page? You know, it kind of comes back to what we're saying. It applies to chords, too. So I try to, you know, I've got the charts. So if I, in a moment, forget a word or what a chord or something, I can take a peek. But knowing and memorizing your songs as much as possible is really helpful and will really strengthen you as a worship leader. It allows you, like you were saying, to get your head up and to connect more with the church family and to personally be able to worship. So just really knowing the songs. And then lastly, kind of along the lines of the chords, you know, learning new chords, try to just really stretch the keys that you play in also. You know, there's just so much fun in just playing in different keys. You know, I don't know how it is for a keyboard, but for a contemporary worship guitarist, obviously there's G, key of G, we all know these chords, probably. And the key of E is another one that we pretty much always play in. But, you know, there are a lot of other great keys to play in. And, you know, some of them, to my ear, sound even better than those. So I play a lot in A and leave these top two strings open and play some nice open chords. And, you know, Everlasting God, Mighty to Save, that I played this morning, we're both in A. And so you can play some nice stuff. D is another good one. You know, you can play some nice open chords in the key of D. B, you know, you get some nice open chords. Phil Wickham does that a lot, playing in the key of B, these open strings up high. So just kind of not settling for the simplest route or the easiest route. We're all busy and don't have tons of time, but you know, we're always a student. We're always learning. And so if you're like, oh, I always play the song in that key, but maybe I should try it in something else or do something else. So just some ways to kind of stretch yourself. And again, I think all of those things, you know, the chords, memorizing the songs and playing different keys have a little bit with just making you a better leader, and the more comfortable you're and confident you are and leading songs, just the better leader you'll be. So a couple tips for that. Any thoughts or comments on any of that, or questions or anything?
Yeah, I'm just thinking of, because when I would lead,
yeah,
I wouldn't think about the guitar at all.
Right.
I mean, you know, I would think about how, like, what key would be nice to sing in for me or for the people that I'm singing
right
with.
Yeah.
And not at all, like, these things, like, I don't know what my question is, but it's just like I just feel very limited in like how to look a bit broader, but I guess that
yeah
comes with
as far as
practicing or
as far as on your instrument specifically, or in as far as instructing
yeah
the rest of the
yeah
team.
Yeah, instructing the rest of the team.
Yeah, that's a really good question. You know, I think the way you do that as a leader, even if you don't know specifically the ins and outs of those instruments, is just to, kind of like I've been doing with you, you know, just challenge your musicians to do these things, but as they apply to their instrument.
Yeah.
And challenge yourself to do them as they, you know, perhaps on keyboard, you know, to play an inverted chord or to add a sixth or something. Maybe, I don't know, but maybe it's not that hard or it doesn't take too much work. But on guitar, it seems it's kind of tough sometimes because you've only got, you know, one hand to do the chords and so on. But I try, as a worship leader, it's just good to have a small working knowledge of each of the instruments in your band. It's not that you have to be able to play all of them, but just to have a little bit of, like, what are the basic functions of drums? Like, what is a drummer? What are the names of the different drums, for instance? Kick drum, cymbals, toms, snare. You know, what do they do? When does a drummer normally use them?
How can you find out if you don't?
Ask your drummer.
Yeah,
ask your drummer. Or,
yeah.
Okay. I mean, if you have people that play those instruments, ask them. Or...
Yeah. So I don't play drums, but I know enough to be able to instruct my drummer what I want him to do. So I'll say, you know, when we start, just play the kick drum, you know, by itself. Or, you know, when it gets real soft, just play on the cymbals a little bit so they're just kind of washy and don't be playing the whole thing, just play on the cymbals a little bit. So, but if you don't, like, you know, if you don't know which is the kick drum or what it's for, then you can't really instruct them that way. Or on keyboard, you know, I don't know how to play, but I know enough to know that, you know, you could play octaves in one hand or the full chord. You can play down low or up high. I mean, that sounds really simple, but, you know, I'll tell my keyboard players, you know, hey, can you play in the higher register during this part of the song so that we can get some of that? Because I'm playing kind of down low. So you could say the same thing to a guitar player, like, hey, on the keys, I'm playing down low and I don't want everything down low. So could you find some chords, the same chords, obviously, but maybe like up higher on your guitar? So if you're playing like A, D, F sharp minor, E, and you say, you know, guitar player, I don't know how to play any chords, but could you play up high? Hopefully they're good enough to know, like, you know, I can play A, D, F sharp minor, E up here, and it'll create some nice space, right? And if your guitar player doesn't know, then say, go learn some more chords.
Buy a capo.
Or buy a capo.
There you go.
So does that... Does that help at all, or did that answer your question?
Yeah.
Can I ask a question about like keys of like men's voices and women's voices? Because I usually, if I lead worship, I try it on my wife because I know that she's a woman. She can sing higher.
Okay.
But sometimes it doesn't work, and I find a key that I'm comfortable in.
Right.
And then I try it on her, and she's like, no, that's just too high, or it's too low, and I'm like, those two.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure of, is it because I'm singing high, or am I singing medium? Or
that's a really good question. So that applies to everybody who sings, whether you're a man or a woman. So, you know, people have different estimates of, like, the typical congregational voice spans between this note and this note. And I think that's good information. Obviously, I don't take it to heart too much because I don't know what those notes are. I can't remember. but yeah, I mean, generally, but my kind of rule of thumb is that whoever's leading the song, if you're leading a song, perhaps, and then the next song Evelina leads, the worship leader needs to be, and I know different people have different opinions, but in my opinion, needs to be just extremely comfortable with the key. And I don't think any of us, just listening to your speaking voices, have a tremendously high voice or a tremendously low voice that is just so much out of the spectrum of what a normal person could lead. So typically, you know, we probably, hopefully as vocalists, have a little bit of a bigger range than most people. But, you know, I found that the leader just needs to be extremely confident. So what I've done is I've kind of discerned, I never sing super low. So I know, you know, what kind of my lowest note I really probably want to go before it starts getting shaky is. And I know what kind of my highest note is for me. And so when I choose a song, I make sure it's in a key that doesn't routinely exceed that note because it's going to be uncomfortable for me to sing. So for me, in my full chest voice, that's an E note. So one of my favorite songs are Deliverer by Evan Wickham.
It's got that high note.
Yes, and the chorus. So I do it in B because that highest note is an E note. So, Hallelujah, what a Savior. Worthy is the Lamb, our Deliverer, mighty fortress. So I'm like, I do it in B, so I'm like, I think the recording's in C, a half step higher, but I'm like, that's just going to be a little bit too high. So in a full chest voice, an E, and falsetto or head voice, up to maybe like F sharps, G sometimes, if it's like one note. So a step and a half, two steps higher. So so what that means is sometimes you need to do a song in like B flat or something a little bit more obscure than like a routine key. And so that's why expanding your key knowledge is really important. So it's the same with the female vocalist. You know, finding a song that's in the general congregational range, but what is your, you know, specific vocal range? I encourage you to know the notes specifically, and then, because, you know, once you're in the moment and you're like, I can sing that note, and you try and you can't, and it sounds awful, you know. So you want to avoid that. So there are any, like, you know, G, E, and D are good guy keys, you know, B and A are good girl, you know, this, because every song has a different melody. So you have to start with the melody and then go from there. That's my theory anyways.
I had the same question, actually, because in our team we have a big range of different voices.
Yeah.
And when I was leading with a girl, for example, I constantly had to change the keys, for example, because there is no way. And I had this feedback sometimes, like, that they say, like, the congregation could not actually sing because I have a pretty deep voice. Mm-hmm. I can go higher, but if you speak about, you know, mm-hmm. you have to be comfortable, you know.
Yeah.
So what do you do, actually? Do you synchronize and listen, actually, what people wish? Like, can you go a little bit up?
Yeah.
You know, because if I was singing with the girls, there is no way I could just do the keys that
right.
I usually sing, for example.
Right.
So I had to go out of my comfort zone constantly, you know. Mm-hmm. So I'm asking myself, or you guys, are like, what is the priority? Is it
yeah.
more like to make the congregation to kind of like feel like, oh yeah, I'm absolutely home, sort of, you know, or is it the leader who, like, as you say, like, who should know the keys and the chords
yeah.
and also being comfortable in with his vocals? So what would you say, like, what is the priority there?
I'd love to hear your feedback. I mean, this mine is just, it's a little bit of both, but I still just lean a little bit more towards the worship leader needs to be
yeah.
comfortable, because it's just, if you're not just really singing strong and well, it's just gonna, nothing's gonna quite come together, really. So maybe as a vocalist, if you got a deep voice, you could work and try to train to expand your range, and maybe you could get to where you could sing songs a half step higher, maybe just a little bit, and get comfortable with that. Maybe that'd be helpful. You know, so you want to be considerate, but I mean, that's, you know, so I'd say 50-50, but maybe more like 60-40 in favor of the leader. And so my wife leads worship, and so we do songs in C sharp, we do songs in, you know, A flat, just because it's like, you know, no one can really tell the difference when they're singing, but for her, that half step is the difference between, like, on a big chorus, being able to just sing out, or being like, oh, it's just right below where I could really sing out, and it just feels kind of flat and less energy, you know. What do you think?
Yeah, I pretty much agree with it. I think it's really like almost 50-50. Because I think in many ways you need to think more, what can the congregation do? Because if they can't sing and you're just up there performing by yourself, then you miss the point.
Right.
But it comes back to, if you can't lead it strongly, then you gotta be able to lead it strongly.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of a loaded thing when it gets into, it depends on the setting. You know, if it's a small group acoustic, or is it a large congregation? Are you plugged in? Is it morning or is it evening? Sometimes in the morning, you can't sing as high as you can in the evening. You know, I might do Everlasting God at a morning study group, maybe in A, and maybe in evening in B. Because you go higher, you get more energy and stuff like that. But, so stuff like that. Yeah. But I would say if your natural comfort zone is I would say it'd be pretty rare that might happen. But if your natural comfort zone is like way either too high or too low for the entire congregation, then work on raising it or lowering it.
Yeah. Yeah, my last thought on that is just like if you're leading worship with a female vocalist, or if one of you are leading worship and you'd like for a male vocalist to lead on a song, then I don't often say always, but I can probably say I always get with that person ahead of time and work out which key is best for them. If not ahead of time, then during rehearsal, you know, because it's just so important. So, you know, don't just assume like, oh, the other guy does it in G, so, you know, you'll do it in G. You know, get with them, play through it once or twice. Is that too high? Is that too low? It's a little low. Can we try a little higher? Okay. Does that feel good? That feels good. Okay, let's do it in that key. So if you don't feel like you can ask your team to mess with the in between keys, you know, depending on how strong they are, C sharp and so on, then maybe you just have to take your pick between whole steps, either C or D, which one's better, you know. But just get with them ahead of time, work it out, sort it out, and you'll just be so thankful because the song will just have so much more life to it if it's in a key the leader really, really gets into, I think. So just having good collaboration and teamwork and, you know, you make the most of it, so. Great questions. All right, sweet. So it's about time to wrap up. I had a few more notes, but these apply a little bit more specifically to guitarists. So this whole time, which is awesome, I love it, has been kind of a question and answer time. But are there any other, you know, we don't have to finish right this minute, are there any other questions or things that would be pertinent to the group? And certainly after this, you know, Aaron and I are available. We'd love to get with you guys on with one-on-one questions or conversations or whatever. But anything else about what we've talked about or comments?
Just a quick question about playing guitar. What would you say is like the first step that's useful for the rest of the group as a guitar player? Is that to know all the keys by heart so you can... Oh, let's play it in A, you know, and because I'm not there right now. I can shift songs with my table much, but it's not like I would play a song in E and let's do it in C instead, and I'm going like, what do you mean, you know, because I can't do that.
Yeah.
Is that like the first step? Or
so the first step in just, like, what can you do to become a better guitar player that will be the most helpful to your team? Is that kind of the question?
I mean, doing like a C and a C2 and a C sharp 7, or I can work on those things, but I mean, if I can't play different keys, that's not going to help very much.
I would say the two biggest things are, so like if a song's in G and we'll say let's do it in A, you know to put the capo on the second fret and play the G chords. Do you know that much or not really?
I just put it.
Oh, okay. So that's the first step is understanding the theory, which isn't hard. I could get with you afterwards and you'd probably learn it in 2 or 3 minutes. Mm. Of if a song's in A and we want to do it in B or C or D, which fret do I put my capo on? So that's your first step. And then just knowing the main chords that are in all of the major keys is another thing that's really helpful. So for piano players, it's also helpful. So, And that's good just for figuring songs out. So if it's, you know, in G, G, D, E minor, C, A minor sometimes. But for all the keys, so B, you know, B, F sharp, G sharp minor, E. So just knowing the basic chords for all of, you know, five or six of the most frequent keys would be really good. But, yeah, probably the biggest thing would just be music theory and understanding, and for piano players also understanding chord theory. So that I was going to talk about, you know, what makes a chord a minor chord instead of a major chord? You know, what note is added or removed for that? What, you know, if there's a D7, I might know how to play that, but why is it a D7 instead of a D? You know, understanding that and knowing that, and you can instruct, help instruct other people. So, you know, like if, like we were playing this morning, 10,000 Reasons, and so I play it with, instead of A and E, A major 7 and E major 7. So if there was, you know, someone that, you know, if someone doesn't know that how to play an A major 7, I could show them or tell them, you know, you want to add the A flat note to that chord to make it a major 7. And so you could tell a keyboard player that if they don't know, and they could probably figure it out from there. So chord theory and music theory in general, and then even just at the very basic, just capo theory. Is that a thing? Capo theory?
Yeah.
Would just really help, I think.
I would say as a musician, it'd be more worthwhile to first learn the actual theory and being able to actually play in the different keys, but mm-hmm. it might be that you'll sooner actually use just learn where to put the capo until
yeah.
you get comfortable with playing in the keys. But
yeah,
this is also what I do usually. Like I play the most comfortable chords if you have the full band, for example, because you can play it blindly, so to say, like it's the simplest, like you just move one two fingers. But if you know how to use the capo, you know, so then you know in what range you are, like are you going up or down, you know, and then you just need to print out, of course, the chords, like for the other ones. Like we don't have a capo, for example, like piano or something, for example.
Right.
This is a little bit annoying sometimes, but yeah. I was talking with a girl, for example, singing, who is singing high, and then like you prepare actually in this key, and she said, no, too high, too low, or whatever. So I can change it, but then I need to do the whole set for the whole band.
Yeah.
Actually to reprint, so to say, this stuff if they don't have it digital, for example.
No? Right.
And this can be a little bit annoying if you don't do so. It's always good to have a little bit of time and not to kind of...
Yeah, that's why I say...
The next 5 minutes we start and then sort
figure out the key ahead of time, yeah. So you've got time to print your charts.
Well, that's why if everybody learns the chord theory and everything, learns how to play, learns in different keys, learns how to transpose, then that makes it a lot easier. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you guys were playing Our God earlier and... totally different key than I'd ever played. Okay, well, try something different. But I mean, maybe that would even be a good idea if you guys want. I mean, you can probably show them on the board afterwards. You know, the numbering system even. I don't know. I mean, you can use the names of the chords or if you know the numbers, because, you know, there's 7 major notes and there's half notes and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like you were saying, especially in modern worship, your typical worship song will have 3 or 4 chords.
Yeah.
You know, in the key of G, probably your G, your C, your D, and your E minor. You might have an A minor in there, and you might have other stuff. But if you know that that's a 1, a 4, a 5, and a 6, you can change that to any key. Okay, let's do it in A instead of G. Mm-hmm. Well, what's your G, C, D, E minor? Well, it's still the 1, 4, 5, 6. So you just next key up. And it makes it a lot
more. Yeah.
I haven't yet like forced my team to learn that, and I don't have, because some people put numbers on their charts instead of chords.
Yeah.
I haven't done that yet, but it's definitely something that the more everybody knows, the easier it'll be.
Yeah.
Which again, all these things like get back to, you know, the music is really just there to equip and to serve a purpose, and the better that you can serve that purpose of helping, you know, lead the congregation in worship, and that's done its job.
And I also think as a leader, it's very, very helpful, which I found sometimes so annoying by one or two leaders that I was playing with. They just kind of like, I'm playing with this song with Kappa there and there, and like, go figure out like where you get the chords or something like that. It's always helpful to give your team, like, okay, we're going to play this chord, like for the guitar, for the bass, or for piano, and so you prepare as a leader actually for that.
Yeah.
Because I was running then last minute, like still like trying to figure out online and this
yeah.
and print or get it digitally or so it's real helpful for the team.
Yeah.
Just for you guys who can like main leading.
Yeah.
So
great game.
So
good point.
This is very, very good. I felt always like my team when I was leading, we were like relaxed and I said, having a tea or something, because everything was set, you know, like the chords
yeah.
and whatever, like, and you can talk a little bit and play
yeah.
a little bit around, experiment,
yeah.
try a few different things.
Yeah. yeah.
What I would say is that gets back to what you said earlier about not only for the worship leader, but for everybody on the team, if you can get to that point where you only really have the notes in front of you on Sunday morning for reference. You should know the lyrics and you should know the chords. And so, and that even ties into the whole, like, you know, smiling or not, or our, how we present ourselves on stage. If our heads are just buried in the chords, you know, that's not really inspiring people to worship. They don't, you know, you don't, you already explained all that.
Yeah.
You're not really, they don't really believe the words you're singing because you're just
yeah.
like reading them. So if everybody on the team knows that, then all these things aren't an issue.
Right.
I mean, of course, that
easier said than
takes
done.
Time. It's easier said than done, but. Yeah.
I was finished with your question.
Yeah. So, what would you say would be? Because we're about to like form a team, or like the, we're into the in the discussion now. Like,
yeah.
How we're gonna build this worship?
Yeah.
Yeah. The whole worship thing, in the church, and we're not that many. But like, what would you say is that? It would be interesting to hear your thoughts on like basic things that you would expect from team members, for example. Or,
yeah.
Yeah. That kind of thing.
Well, I'll say one thing, and then maybe we can get together later and talk about it as much as we want.
Yeah.
But the one thing that I'd say is that, you know, working with volunteers, something I heard a pastor say at a conference years and years ago is that volunteers and just people will meet the bar, you know, where you set it. So I don't know if that's an American expression or not. So like raising the bar or like
standard.
The standard. Yeah. So if you say, you know, this is where I'm raising the bar to for you as a volunteer. And if it's you need to be here on time, you know, then your bar is about right here. And they'll probably meet that. Hopefully they're a good volunteer. If you lead well and just say, hey, that's just what we do. That's how we do it. So be here at 7 o'clock and we'll practice. Okay. But if you raise the bar a little bit and say, be here at 7 and, I'm going to tell you what the songs are a couple days before. Listen to the songs so you can start to learn them. Then you've kind of raised the bar a little bit and people will probably meet it if that's the expectation. So, for my team, you know, I send the set list out on Monday and we rehearse on Thursday. So the bar is pretty high. And so they listen to the songs, learn the songs, print, I send them the charts and then they print them out and make their own notes, learn the parts, come on time. We have two rehearsals. You know what I mean? And a few other things. So it's not like impossible to meet, but it's a high bar, a high standard. And I just communicate plainly, like, yeah, that's just how we do it, and this is why, and why it's important, and so if you'd like to be a part of the team, we love it, and so this is what we do. And so I just say, figure out, you know, if it's a small church with just a few volunteers, it's hard to ask a ton of people. So, you know, figure out where you want that standard or that bar to be, but set it, stick to it, and I think people will rise to the occasion and meet it, and people like to be led, you know, they like to for you to have a plan and know what you want and just to not in a mean way, but just tell them this is what's expected, and more often than not people respond well and say, oh good, thank you, every once in a while you get a person that's like, whoa, why are you telling me all this stuff? And sometimes that means they might not be the best team member if they're having issues with you. But that would be, that's one thing that I've always remembered, you know, that's kind of applies to all kinds of stuff. Figure out what your standard is, set the bar, clearly communicate it, and stick to it. And then let's go from there.
Okay, can I have one more thing?
Yeah.
What we did also, if it makes sense for you guys to kind of like sit down and what we just said, to write it down, actually. This is what we did also with our team, for example. We did it very extensively because I was working out. Worship pastor, the main one, like was also working out. So we did like extensively, but you don't need that. Like if you say like it's just 10 points, you know, like for example, like listen to songs on Monday, whatever, like, and you go through the list and you print it to every musician, you know? So everybody knows it and has no excuse, actually. If they agree to play with you, you kind of know, or if not, like if they have an issue, for example, like with being in time or practice, oh, I didn't have time, and like, so kind of like, you agree, like, are we agreeing at this? Are you going to be okay, you know? Whether it's the spiritual part, the moral part of your life,
right,
or like the practical, like to
yeah,
listen through the songs, to go maybe through the songs or print out, or
yeah,
say like, I'm going to print the song, so don't worry about it, but just listen to it, or like his digital, like if you want, but I can print out properly or something like that. So that makes a lot of sense. The same for the sound team. We had a lot of issues like with media here and there. So I said like, let's do a checklist, like before the service, after the service, because something get lost somewhere, you know, and then you forget something, and so we just do like click, you know, like checking the boxes off, and it's running better and better, and it helps quite a lot, actually.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's a German thing, but the box, I don't know if you guys
did. Yeah, no, yeah, we did.
But it helps a lot, and like, I'm not a box guy at all, but it really increased, actually, the quality of the team somehow, and if we agree, like, okay, that's the rules,
yeah,
this is what we do, like, before the service, afterwards, and things.
Cool. All right, well, let's go ahead and wrap up. Let me pray for us, and then again, we'd love to connect with you guys individually or throughout the week. So thanks for being here and sharing this time with me and Aaron and with one another. So, well, Lord, we pray that we would take some of these things and just become better and better leaders and musicians, but ultimately disciples of Christ, and that our ministries would grow and flourish by your grace and anointing, and that the music and worship of each of our churches would just be passionate and genuine in every way. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen. Amen.
Thank you, Brent.
Yeah.